Welcome to the MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex, and with me, as usual, is James. Before we get started, you can check out our website, themacguffinman.com. We've most recently talked about A Mighty Wind, Mulholland Drive, Gattaca, and before that was pop star Never Stop, Never Stopping, which I think I'm finally going to have to stop mentioning next week. But one more week of glorious title repeating.
Never stop.
Yeah, exactly. It'll never stop in my heart, you know. But yeah. Anyway, follow us on Twitter at The MacGuffin Man and tell your friends. All right, theme song.
Welcome to The MacGuffin Man. And now, here are Alex and James.
James.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, once again, podcasting.
9 years in the making.
9 years in the making. since 3 years before we even had a podcast.
And I think we talked about the Bourne Legacy too, so.
Yeah, we did do the Bourne Legacy, didn't we? Yeah.
Believe so.
Yeah, we did. Because I think I might be that movie's biggest fan, other than maybe Tony Gilroy, but I don't know that Tony Gilroy has the capacity to be a fan of anything, really.
Yeah.
Seems like kind of a dick.
In reading about the Bourne franchise lately, I've been reminded about how middling to disappointing people found that movie.
Which I think is silly, but I think it's a good movie that people... I mean, I think rightfully it has the name Bourne in the title, like judged too harshly on what I think are a couple of the best action movies ever made. Yeah. So,
well, for any detectives out there who didn't piece all the clues together, we will be talking about the newest Jason Bourne film, titled Jason Bourne.
Nice. Perfect.
Starring Jason Bourne.
Yep. As himself.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's how I see him, at least.
Well, no, you've
when he buys a zoo, he's still Jason Bourne to me. Oh my god, Jason Bourne bought a zoo. I love this crossover idea. This would be the first Cameron Crowe movie I actually like.
All right, let's settle down here.
I can't, I'm too excited.
Well, yeah, that kind of gets to what I was going to say. You've already mentioned being a big fan of The Bourne Legacy, and we did some podcasts on the original Bourne trilogy, mm-hmm. Which we declared our love for frequently.
And continue to pretty much on a weekly basis and text messages to each other.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were big fans of those and very much looking forward to this one, mm-hmm. And now we've had our chance to see it, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah. Let's give it a shot, as Dewey would say.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Well, I guess I'll qualify this a little bit. Like, I think Supremacy and Ultimatum are two of the best action movies ever made that I have very emotional memories tied up in seeing them each for the first time. Like, they're both separately some of my favorite movie-going experiences in my life. And I love Paul Greengrass very much. And this movie has some pretty glaring errors in it. Jason Bourne does. That said, I fucking love this movie.
Yeah?
Oh, so much fun. Like, as an action movie, it's just great. There are some very severe missteps, but I think it's kind of like, I mean, this is an over-the-top comparison because Jason Bourne is not The Dark Knight, but it is very the boat sequence in The Dark Knight, where it's just the bad stuff seems so much worse than the good stuff, and it sticks out so much more. But the stuff that is good is so good. The action sequences are amazing, and I really like Jason Bourne. I thought it wasn't as good as I wanted it to be, but 80% as good of a Bourne movie is, as I'm hoping for, is still pretty great.
Yeah. Right. And do you think it's, it sounds like you think it succeeds as an action movie, but does it succeed in the way that the other Bourne movies succeed, or is it just kind of a good action movie separate from all the other things?
Well, the big problem is the Bourne movies are always better at... it's kind of like how Jason Bourne operates via conversation, is that he doesn't say a lot, and the movies are always better at showing and not telling, and Jason Bourne tries to tell too much in this movie. Like, if you think back to The Bourne Supremacy, which I think is a good comparison point for this movie, the plot makes almost no sense, and the reason that you're able to completely forget about it because I had forgotten about it, and again, I might be that movie's biggest fan in the world. When I watched it again last week, I was like, what the hell is the plot of this movie? And that's a movie I've seen probably 20 times. And I also just didn't care, you know? And it's because they don't vocalize too much of the stuff about oil or whatever Brian Cox is getting into with the Russians, you know? Whereas in this movie, there is a little bit too much pontificating about what is actually happening, where if you removed, I think if you removed like two scenes from this movie, or at least compressed a lot of it, I think this movie comes off as a totally, totally different movie that is much stronger. And but even that said, I do really enjoy this movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the topic of kind of spelling out too much, I think Bourne's up to like 35 lines of dialogue in this movie. Shut the fuck up already. Yeah.
No, I mean those parts are. Like, Bourne is not the problem. The problem is, like, there's a point in the movie where Vincent Cassell's character, I don't even know if he has a name, he's just the asset, but...
Yeah, he's credited as asset.
Is he actually? That's
100%. Not even the asset, but asset. Which is actually one of my favorite things about this movie. Okay.
But yeah, there's a conversation between him and Tommy Lee Jones, right, or Dewey, and... in London, right after Bill Camp's character, I think his name is Malcolm Smith, gets shot and then falls off a building and dies. And Bourne is listening into his hearing device, whatever communication device that would be called, the little earpiece. And he hears Vince Cassell saying, "No, the only way that this stops is if one of us is dead." And like, that's such a stupid line to have in the movie. Like, just cut that line out entirely and we still know, you know, like we've seen other movies with two people that are clearly meant to face off at the end, you know, and we know that one of them will die. Yeah. And that's a small example of that. Yeah.
No, I think it's a great example because it's, you know, as much as we like the Bourne movies, they're not so much different than other action movies. They just do a lot of things well.
They're silly shit. You
know, this idea that these two... Yeah, but I mean, this idea that these two people are going to inevitably go head to head is something we've seen a bit. I've seen so many times before, but I just expect this series to do it with a bit more subtlety. And yeah, as you said, eliminate that line. It's quite clear once he's, you know, shooting people who work for the CIA on his way to Bourne that, you know, this is extremely personal and this is clearly going to end with them killing each other. That to put a line in that's so kind of heavy-handed, I thought was a poor choice as well.
Yeah, for sure. And like, there are really interesting things about Asset. You know, like, I love the idea that he hates Bourne because Bourne, what Bourne was doing in the Bourne Ultimatum, what we as viewers decided was the right thing to do, really harmed somebody in a way that Bourne couldn't have anticipated, or maybe could have anticipated but didn't think about at the time. I think that stuff's really cool, and I think tying that into Ultimatum in that way was very interesting. And it's similar to the way that Pamela Landy might be in jail. I forget where she is right now, but in this universe, but she was definitely under investigation in the Bourne Legacy because of what she did. And I like that idea of things that aren't fully discussed but seem to make sense in the world. And there's too much like fully discussing going on in Jason Bourne. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I'll agree.
Yeah. Because I mean, like I started to say, like, there's lots of silly stuff in every Bourne movie. It's just that things move so quickly that you don't have time to focus on them. And you basically just focus on how cool the shitboard is doing is, you know, and that's why this movie's very slight, slightly slower pace than like Ultimatum is, hinders it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. This needs to come in at a hot 100 minutes and you'll
not 100, but like, I think this movie is 5 minutes longer than Bourne Ultimatum. And I think 5 minutes is exactly how much should have been trimmed, you know, like, and that's not even, cutting out full scenes. You can compress a lot of the scenes that are, you know, Tommy Lee Jones and or Dewey and Heather Lee talking, Riz Ahmed and I forget what Zuckerberg's name is in this movie, but
Aaron Kallur
and Dewey's conversation could have been compressed. And like, the versions of these conversations that exist in the previous two Greengrass Bournes are much shorter, you know, and also shot in a sort of dirtier way. Like, this movie in general was shot a little too clean for my liking, especially in the conversation scenes. Like, they were just, where in past Greengrass movies, there's like always a head in the way and you can kind of only just see Neil Daniels' eye or whatever. You're getting clean looks at people's faces. And I think that that hurt those scenes as well as well as the not incredible dialogue.
So you thought, I mean, the shaky cam's still there, but the kind of some of the calmer scenes just don't have the typical amount of things going on?
Yeah, I think in general, this movie is shot cleaner than either of Greengrass's previous two Bourne movies, which I think is really helpful in the action sequences, because I think the action sequences in this movie, every single one of them is amazing. But it hurts the dialogue scenes, where what might have kept what kept my attention during, again, to go on that Neil Daniels Simon Ross scene that I mentioned with that shot of the eye, which is a very deep cut reference that I'm sure only you get.
Colin Knight.
Yeah, Colin Knight, that is a good point. But like that type of stuff really it adds something to the movie, and especially since people are talking about things that are hidden, you know, hiding the person saying these things in dirtier shots is it just adds an element of visual interest and also thematic interest.
Right, but I think even more so than, you know, every Bourne movie has in ways been about surveillance and had that as a very prominent theme and, you know, plot point as far as finding people and tracing people all over the globe, the way that they travel in the Bourne universe. This one is about, you know, seeing everything. And this is another thing that, you know, I think reminds me of The Dark Knight as well, is, you know, this deep dream. It doesn't seem like it's going to be far off. And, you know, this mass surveillance program that was running in near to the end of The Dark Knight. I wonder if maybe that ties into how easy it is to see things in this movie, the way that our characters have access to even more cameras and even more satellites and more enhancement technology with those cameras.
Yeah, I had a good chuckle when she said enhanced.
Oh, everybody did. Yeah. You're not the only one, despite you liking Blade Runner more than probably most people somehow.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And how quickly and perfectly it works. But anyway, I think this idea of not being able to hide everywhere and everything being visible might tie into that as well.
Yeah, and I agree with that to an extent, but I think if that's, like, I think that's such a minor sacrifice to give up to, in an action movie, give your movie more visual interest, you know? I think, like, they made the wrong choice. I think, like, it's a 60-40 thing, but they should have chosen the 60 and they chose the 40, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. But I do see your point. And given how much I love Paul Greengrass and the people behind these movies, I like to think that that was their idea, as opposed to just bowing to the shaky cam detractors, which would be stupid.
Yes.
And which they clearly didn't do because of the action sequences in this movie. But what did you think about the movie?
I liked it less than you did.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah. No, I was, let's see. Yeah, I was a little let down. I found it a bit derivative. I didn't like the action sequence nearly as much as you seem to. I thought the Greek embassy one was really, really good.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I thought they had everything right there. But I thought the final fight with that Vincent Cassette wasn't that good. And I mean, we had audio of them being tracked into the sewer, and then no one ever follows them down, and he seems to be walking away pretty slowly at the end, which are things that bug me more than they bug you, I understand. But I thought that was a little much to forgive. I thought, yeah, I thought the fights weren't great, and I thought Vegas was a little bit of a letdown too. The Vegas action scene, despite it having good moments and good things around it, I thought for the kind of the big climax scene, it didn't get me where it needed to go.
Oh, I don't know. I love the Vegas car chase and pretty much everything that happens in Vegas. I was a big fan of.
Yeah. Oh, there's lots of good stuff there. I like one thing that you touched on earlier that this movie still does a bit of, but I agree, not enough. It's kind of moving over really big things really quickly. Like when they talk about how to cover up the Vegas incident and the failed assassination attempt and things like that.
Yep.
I thought that was really good. And even just the phrase lone wolf shooter, which is something we hear in the news now, that I just, it was definitely a phrase, you know, a year ago, but not to the degree that I think it has been since this movie must have been, you know, written and edited and packaged and things like that. So those are some of the little things I love about the Bourne movies and dealing with, you know, the CIA and these big, in NSA and these big organizations. I thought that one was really, really quick to be done. You know, very, very timely.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't like the wire around his foot after that Smith thing.
Yeah, totally fine with that assessment.
Yeah.
Jason Bourne is a one in a billion person, but in this movie he has like three of those one in a billion moments, you know?
Yeah, I really didn't like that. It just didn't seem very, very Bourne-y to me.
Yeah.
How did you feel about this movie kind of contemporizing itself? I mean, this was 9 years later, after much talk of Matt Damon saying, you know, I'm not going to do one, or I'm only going to do one if something really, really good comes along and Paul Greengrass wants to do it again.
The Damon's only condition was Paul Greengrass. Like, I think even if the idea was shitty and Paul Greengrass was on board, he would have still done it. I think those two people just love each other.
It seems that way.
It's adorable.
The good idea for the script was have Paul Greengrass direct it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that was the when they met each other. They're like, oh, we have to kill Marie in the first 10 minutes. This is the new romance, is Damon and Greengrass, you know?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's funny you mentioned Marie dying, and earlier you mentioned the Bourne supremacy. I mean, this is in so many ways just the Bourne supremacy done over again.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, for sure. And I mean, the Athens sequence is very... very reminiscent of a combination of the Waterloo Station and Tangier section of Ultimatum put together.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, which are the two best parts of the movie. Right. So it makes sense.
Yeah, I did enjoy...
everything about the sequence in Athens? Yes, you're right.
Actually, here's my one complaint about this Athens sequence. Actually, I have a couple, but here's my main one. I really wanted Bourne to... like start yelling in Greek to incite the riots. I think that would have been a great thing, just knowing kind of how worldly he is and kind of doing anything to cause mass confusion the way that he does throughout this series. Because I like when he's meeting up with Malcolm Smith and sets all the fire alarms off at once, you know,
because it's awesome.
Yeah, it's just when movies kind of set you up, and you know, the way that this movie kind of has one beat there where you know something's going to happen, and to kind of give you that time to set it up just gives you time to get your expectations higher. So if the thing isn't good, it's really not good because you've had all this time for anticipation, but you know, it has the confidence to kind of give you that beat and then follow through and then create a good action sequence out of that for the most part.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Nikki's gone now.
I know. I mean, I'm sure you felt the same way, but pretty much as soon as that action sequence starts, you're just like, oh yeah, Nikki's dead.
Well, I know. That's what I mean about it being a little too derivative of supremacy in some points.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I would agree that it's a little too derivative of basically every movie that came before it. Like a lot of reviews of this movie have been calling it a greatest hits Bourne movie, which is not incorrect.
I mean, after 9-10 years, you know, almost a decade, how did you feel about this kind of getting up to speed as far as you know, this movie designing itself for a slightly different era?
I mean, anytime you show a hacker on screen, it's gonna just seem silly, and a lot of this my appreciation of this movie, I think, hinges on the fact that I don't know a lot about those things. Whereas I feel like I've mentioned this on the podcast, whenever I see somebody playing basketball in a movie, like, I can always tell if they've actually played basketball before or if they haven't. Like, if I was somebody that was technologically inclined, I feel like I would be like, oh, come on, you don't use SQL to hack people. But
complaints I've generally heard and not understood as well.
Well, that was one that actually jumped out to me because I kind of know what SQL is.
Yeah,
but yeah. And there's also just no reason for that subtitle to be on screen, but anyway, it doesn't matter. I don't know. Like, I think I'm just luckily for me, I am ignorant in a lot of those ways, where in ways that Paul Greengrass and Christopher Rouse, his co-writer slash editor, seem to also be ignorant and just didn't care about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, I think a lot of action movies have ignorance because they don't, it doesn't make sense to really talk about it. And since my main complaint about this movie is that there's too much talking, I think they would have been wrong to explain more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, they said post Snowden in the movie and in the trailer.
Yeah.
Not too much further discussion on that, but I think that's kind of something to let you know that they have not just checked out of the news for the past 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, again, I mean, part of the reason we love Supremacy and Ultimatum is that they're movies about the Bush administration that never talk about the Bush administration. So I think this would have been a cooler, better movie if it was a movie about Snowden that never talked about Snowden.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to me it seems, you know, one of the things I think they did right and maybe did spend a bit more time talking on, as you said, the Dewey Couleur sequences could be shorter. The notion that surveillance has gone corporate, I think, is timely.
Yes.
You know, the way that, as I said, all the Bourne movies have in a way been about surveillance just because it's such a prominent feature in the script, and you know, that's how they find Jason Bourne and how he finds people sometimes as well. But I thought that was a good kind of true piece, because it seems that a lot of the discussions in the past few years about privacy have not been about the government anymore and have been about you know, social media and different corporations that, because so much communication and so much business is done through those things now, they kind of possess a lot of power that used to be in the hands of the government. So I think that was a good kind of timely piece of a scripting that they did there.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, it's something that's done pretty briefly. Like Dewey just mentions it to Couleur when he's talking about how you've made the country way more difficult to defend and all these things, which is not wrong and is a nice piece of dialogue. And that's what I'm talking about with tightening up these things, where you can still leave these scenes in and just take out a few lines, and it makes the movie move more briskly, and also makes it seem less like old white man says this, you know? Yeah. Which is what this movie has a case of from time to time.
How'd you feel about Heather Lee? I don't think we've even mentioned her name.
We have mentioned her name a little bit, but not when she, only in dumb parts when she says enhance.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I think she was interesting. And again, with some of the leaving things to us to sort of think about, I thought there was a lot of interesting stuff with her. She's kind of, I mean, so much of this movie deals with the reason that Bourne was brought into the agency, and the idea of somebody so young being in the agency and trying to figure out how she should operate within it. I thought all of that stuff was really, really interesting, and how she does, there isn't an answer that she has at the end of the movie. Like, the whole point of the end of the movie is that her place in the industry or in the agency is up in the air. Her place, with her principals is up in the air, even though she says her principals are secure in Vegas. All of that stuff I thought was really interesting, and she is the character in this movie that's the most interesting to think about, specifically because she doesn't have the like, this is the thing I think at the beginning of the movie and this is the thing I think at the end of the movie, you know, like, this is how I will operate. It seems to be shifting.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of people criticizing her age, you know, just to be that high up in the CIA at her age, but I think that does two good things. I mean, it's, she's part of the cyber division. I mean, you'd want someone young, you know,
presumably, yeah.
Yeah, someone who would know their stuff and be able to keep up with it for another, you know, let's say 40 years. Yeah. I mean, Dewey seems to be holding his own, but you can tell there's parts where he's out of his element, and that's why you have someone like Heather Lee around.
Yeah, exactly. That feels so proper to me, like them working side by side like that, because you would need an old head of the CIA watching over it to be like, no, this is how we do things in the agency. But you would also need somebody that is young enough to know all of these new things, you know, and to have grown up her whole life with these things integrated into her. her day-to-day yeah. existence.
And still, as I said, be able to keep up with that ongoing, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, the other thing I liked about her youth is that, you know, kind of what you were saying, that she... oh, can you hear that?
Yeah.
Someone's doing wheelies around me.
Asset and Jason Bourne are chasing each other.
No, the other thing that's good about her youth is what you were saying, that she doesn't really know. You know, if she had kind of come up through the ranks for 20 years, then had this position, I think all her allegiances would be set, and she kind of has a better grasp of how everything functions, and she'd be allied to certain people in the agency, but maybe not others as much. But I think it was interesting trying to watch her navigate these things. And, you know, you were listing things that she doesn't seem sure about. And I didn't get the feeling that she was sure how she felt about Bourne.
No, I agree.
Yeah. And the end seems to say that she doesn't like how the agency. I mean, tell me if you read this differently. She doesn't like how the agency does things, but she still wants to. She's still not on Bourne's side, mm-hmm. but just didn't like the way that they went about it. Or do you think it's, or did you see kind of glimmers of her, you know, the way Nikki eventually just allied with Bourne, that, you know, outside of the purview of the agency?
It really feels like she's right in the middle. Like, she honestly doesn't know which way she's leaning. Like, she wants, both ways involve her staying in the CIA, but whether or not she sort of becomes this dissenting voice within the agency, or gets Bourne in to help her, or, you know, tries to get him to come in. But it is weird because, well, not weird. It's interesting because I don't have an answer. And again, it's something that remains unsaid in this movie that says too much, but, it leaves us in an interesting place that I don't have an answer for your question. It's just something that, I've been pondering for the past few days, and I don't know what she actually wanted to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
How does this rank for you for closing, since we're on the subject, as far as the Moby hit?
Third best.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the proper answer, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's not great, but it still kind of has the, you know, gotcha effect, and he's long gone. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing that the part of this movie that is most reminiscent to some of those, I mean, it's not really a gotcha moment. Like, Ultimatum isn't really a gotcha moment. It's like, oh god, I hope he survives, like,
right,
that sort of moment that I was physically squirming during because I didn't know. again, I was 21 and I thought they might have killed him, but yeah, the moment in this movie that's sort of that equivalent for me is when, right after Dewey is killed by Heather Lee, and it's kind of on topic with what we've been talking about, how she's like, you know, you don't have to do this. This can come in. This can stop here. And Bourne says, you know, I did this. Like, it's immediately, like, it's again, this is the third time the Dark Knight has come up, but it's immediately, I killed this person, you know? And she's like, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. You can come in with me and we can stop this now. And that sad Bourne music plays. I don't even know how to describe it, but it's the only time in the movie when that music plays, or at least it's the only time I noticed it. And it's just, he doesn't say anything. He just leaves. And when Heather says you have a choice, like, that music plays, and it shows that he knows he has no choice, and he just leaves. And it's just like, he is the person he is, and the way he lives his life cannot, or the way he feels about the world cannot exist within the CIA. And I thought that was this, and it can't, in tandem with that, it can't exist in a happy life. And I thought that was a really nice emotional moment for a character that I have invested a lot of my time in thinking about, you know. And right. I thought that was a really, really good moment. And yeah, I really enjoyed it.
How'd you feel about all the stuff with his dad? That seems to be kind of one of the major plot points that we haven't talked about, and I don't think is that strong, really.
Oh, it could have been left out entirely.
That's kind of disappointing to me.
Yeah, I was as soon as I saw a flashback, like a memory thing happening, I was very disappointed because I assumed they would be smart enough to not do it at all. And I just thought it was a mistake.
Yeah, it really doesn't provide much. And I mean, it seems like the obvious next layer to get further down is to go to the daddy thing, but it really didn't do much for me.
Yeah, no, it just wasn't a smart choice. Like, and you could have just removed that stuff and changed a couple of Jason Bourne's lines, which is 80% of his lines, but and little to nothing about the movie really changes. I think like you could have just been could have just focused on him being upset that Nikki died, you know, and I think that would have been more interesting because, again, one of the unspoken things in the Bourne movies is that they seem to have had a very close relationship at some point that Bourne would theoretically now remember, because if he remembers everything, he would remember his time with Nikki.
Right.
But they still never talk about it. I think that could have driven him as well as just his general, I am Jason Bourne, I fight for good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. The daddy issues did not need to happen. He's not Inigo Montoya or whatever.
Yeah. He one punches for justice. He doesn't that involved.
Yeah, exactly.
I like Nikki burning her computer station right away.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
Jason taught her a few things. Yeah.
Exactly. And once again, I mean, another thing that probably goes without mentioning, but so many of the real locations and you know, big globe-trotting set pieces were, I'm always happy to have those back.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, like, again, I mean, part of the difference in our opinion on this movie is just that, like, I will forgive so much if you give me a good action movie, as I have with this movie that I do really enjoy specifically because it gives me some action sequences that I don't think anybody else could give me other than Paul Greengrass and Jason Bourne. So I'm willing to forgive a lot, and there's some good action in this movie, and I really love it. Yeah. Yeah.
We texted only briefly about this movie before recording about it, as per the MacGuffin Constitution. You said there's something green zony about this, and I've seen this movie twice now, and I can't place it.
It's all of the I mean, it's the sit down between Dewey and Zuckerberg, whose name I've already forgotten.
Aaron Kallur.
Yeah, I just always want to call him Nas because I'm watching The Night Of right now, and Riz Ahmed plays Nas and is the lead. But anyway, Bill Camp also in both things. But anyway, their sit down has a lot of that stuff, as well as a scene that I like a bit more, which is, but for reasons that I don't know were intended, where Kallur is addressing people talking about Deep Dream and how we have 1.5 billion users and don't worry, your privacy is safe and that's it. But I liked that scene exists in front of like a room full of clapping sycophants, which is I thought was a really interesting thing because I always feel that people are way too optimistic about technology, and the people that would be at that thing are exactly the type of people that are way too optimistic about technology.
Yeah.
And I like that part, even though all of the even just the name Deep Dream is so fucking stupid.
Yeah, I thought that was and I love fake tech startup names. Like,
Yeah.
it's one of my favorite things. It's 20% of my appreciation of the show Silicon Valley,
Yeah.
which has a lot of good things going for it. Yeah, I thought Deep Dream was a way too ominous a name.
Yeah.
And yeah, the hot ticket with Aaron Kallur and the director of the CIA at
I know.
Silicon Valley, I thought it was a very interesting choice as
It's
well.
so weird. Yeah, I think if there's a sequel to this movie, I would recommend they hire a writer that is not Paul Greengrass or Christopher Rose.
Yeah, and there will be a sequel, right?
Certainly not immediately. I think there will be, and I think it will be good because I feel like Damon and Greengrass know this isn't their best work because I think they're both very smart, intelligent people. The one thing that you know, you kind of have to remember about the original Bourne series is that everyone that came at like each sequel is better than the movie that came before it. In my opinion, it seems like everybody has a favorite Bourne movie, even though there are three to choose from. Nobody seems to pick the same one.
Three and two halves now.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. But I remember, like, when I saw the Bourne Identity in theaters, I was just like, I was sitting with somebody and we were just cracking up laughing at it the whole time. Like, and it was only after The Bourne Supremacy, which I loved immediately, that I went back and watched The Bourne Identity, and Supremacy made Identity so much better. And Ultimatum then made Supremacy even better, you know? And I feel like time, again, will kind of wash away some of these shittier things. But these shittier things are also going to be visible to Damon and Greengrass. They might be by now, or they might not be for a couple of years. But if they do come around and do another sequel, I think they would be honest with the faults about this one, and hopefully try and switch some things up and maybe make Heather Lee a sort of Pamela Landy type of thing, and actually have Bourne work with somebody again that doesn't get killed in the first 10 minutes, which I think would be cool.
Yeah, in a very reminiscent manner as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that sequence is so good, though. but another, like, one of the little things I like about this movie that we haven't talked about, and this is the Bourne series in general as well, is the way that, and again, something that just happens and isn't spoken about, is the way that Bourne, all these little things that happen that Bourne knows he has to do to continue on his journey, but they're all such little things. It's like that, the flashlight on top of the fan that he uses to draw attention away from himself, or in this movie setting off the fire alarms in Paddington Square.
Yeah, that's not little and cool enough, though. I mean it might be cool enough, it's not little enough.
Yeah,
I didn't get that, and I didn't get another, I mean, he ripped the leg off that chair and fought with it, but I thought
that was pretty dope.
Yeah, it was cool, but it wasn't as good. I don't know, I didn't get those were the kind of the I know you don't like the checklist sequel that much, but those were kind of some of the things that I was left wanting with.
Yeah, I like the him luring the men, the guys in, or the Alpha team into the streetcar in Greece. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Also just stealing a Molotov cocktail out of somebody's hand.
From someone who apparently wasn't too attached to their Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much like very easy thievery in this movie. Like his camera, the tracking device, the key card or the badge he uses to get into Vegas, or the convention in Vegas.
Yeah.
All that stuff was very very simple, and it's like, yeah, I guess he's just a common thief now. He's a modern street rat like Aladdin.
You saw the Ocean's movies.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. That was Linus's specialty.
Uh-huh. And Vincent Castle was there.
Yeah, okay. Again, in the one that nobody liked. Going back to, or nobody but me liked, sorry. Maybe I'm just a big Vincent Castle fan, and that's
maybe all
this is.
Is he in Black Swan?
He is in Black Swan.
You love Black Swan.
I did like Black Swan. That actually most people liked more than me. But anyway, Bourne does all these little things that he sort of has to keep, that he has to do just to keep going, and it's never mentioned, and you don't really even realize them as they're happening until you think about them after. Like, there's his introduction, well, not his introduction, but his first daytime scene in Supremacy, when he's running on the beach in India. He's just sprinting along the beach, and then he sees Carl Urban's character, whose name I forget, but who has been sent to kill him. He sees him walking around in town when he goes to buy a bottle of water.
Asset.
Yeah, okay, exactly, Asset. When he sees that guy, he has purchased his bottle of water, and he immediately knows that this guy is coming to kill him. But he still drinks the bottle of water as quickly as possible, which is such a like tiny detail, because you know, he would need to hydrate after running that hard in such a hot environment, especially knowing that he has to go right into this chase sequence. And stuff like that is really cool. And I think in Jason Bourne, there's a couple good examples of him seeing something and he knows he has to act like immediately, and then it sort of coming together very quickly. And I think the best example is when he realizes what's happening in that hot ticket at the convention of the CIA director and Kalur doing their little chat, and where he's just like, he gets that text from Heather and just immediately is like, oh shit, I gotta do this, and he busts into the room and smashes that light, points it at the only place that he thinks somebody could be shooting from. And
yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, it's so cool. The way that the Bourne movies, and the way that the editing shows this, like when you have like very little time to act, but you also know exactly what you have to do, the way these movies show them, it's so quick and you only see the tiny little actions, but all of them adding up to the whole is very cool and very interesting. And I can think of times in my life where like you never think about it in the moment, but like pretty much right after, it's just It's like, oh, I only remember the actions I had to do this. And I mean, this is a shitty example, but like I was shooting a wedding on the weekend and they told me I was done. And then my gear is all packed up and my camera gear is all packed up. And then they're like, oh, time to cut the cake. And so I immediately have to like rip open my bag, put a camera together. And I literally slid on my knees under a photographer's camera to shoot this. And and afterwards I was like, oh, it was kind of boring. And I could only remember the like actual actions I made. And I think these movies do a good job of showing that in such a quick way that is reminiscent of how these things actually feel in the moment, even though you never have time to register these thoughts, you know?
Yeah, this isn't exactly that at all. But when Dewey's on the phone with Castle before, or with Asset, sorry, before that same shooting we were talking about at ExoCon 2016?
Sure, just whatever. It could be ConCon.
ConCon. And they just show him flexing his hand for a while before he even mentions having to be shot. I thought that's another just tiny little filmmaking thing that watching it again the second time, I got to appreciate more.
Yeah, for sure. I would agree with that. Speaking of little acting things, we haven't talked about Riz Ahmed all that much, but as Kalur, I really liked the way that he, the one thing about his performance that I think is really good is the way that he speaks publicly and privately in very different ways. Like when he's giving that speech, both at his first Deep Dream speech that is very brief, but and then also when he's again on the hot ticket at ConCon. Like he's talking in a totally different way in these scenes as when he's talking to whoever that person is in the car with him that like seems to be a second in command, and also in his scenes with Dewey. And I think that's interesting because there's a real thread of public versus private existing in this movie. And I mean, the end point of the movie is Bourne telling Heather Lee that like you have to be the person. You have to be the same person in public and in private, you know, because if you're not, say, I don't know, good and honorable makes this movie seem corny, but I mean, other parts of this movie also make it seem corny. but if you're not good and honorable at all times, like it'll catch up to you eventually, right? Like his idea being that since the CIA isn't always doing what they're saying they're doing, it makes it in general a corrupt agency.
And he can't be any part of it.
Exactly. And that's something that a thread that I think runs through the entire movie is this sort of public versus private idea. Because if there's anything that's true about Jason Bourne, it's that he is the same all the time. You know, like no matter where he is, who he's talking to, like he might be lying to somebody, but you know that it's always going to come. That lie is always helping him continue on with doing the quote unquote right thing, you know? And
he's not smiling.
Yeah, exactly. Because he sees the world for how it is. But and I thought that was cool about that was a cool representation of the idea of public versus private. And another thing that I think ties into that very well is the choice of Vegas as a as the backdrop for the end of the movie. It's just like it is this place that seems perfect on or not perfect. Nobody thinks Vegas is perfect. Everybody sees it as a hellhole, but like this place that is like
glitzy and
spectacle, exactly. It's promising you like optimism. You can go here and forget about everything, all of your problems. And I think that ties in really well with that the way that people are way too optimistic about technology. It's like, sure, it's Vegas. Everything's great in Vegas, you know? We get to forget about all of our troubles. But and then fighting in the sewer underneath are these two guys that are fighting for, well, they're literally trying to kill each other, and that there's always something shittier happening in the sewers of these places, even these places that seem ideal. And I thought Vegas was a cool backdrop for that, and also the car chase, the fact that it is tearing up this ideal place. I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. And there's a couple other little things, like the other shot I remember is there's a shot right near the end before Heather Lee gets in that car with dramatic Mark Evan Jackson.
That's who that is.
It's not who that is.
No,
it's,
I know.
Okay. Yeah. But the there's this shot. It's a helicopter shot, and it's a shot of the White House. And I think it's the White House, maybe. But it's a notable Washington building that I'm now forgetting if it's the White House or not, but it is a signifier of American politics. But there are two cranes in front of it. Like, there's something under construction between the camera and the building. And I thought that was a really interesting way of showing that the country is still under construction at all times. Like, you know, this country is multiple hundreds of years old, but it's still changing and evolving, and you need to be able to keep up with these things. You need to keep building new things, and you have to kind of do it the right way, which is kind of what Bourne is trying to do. The fact that he is the seemingly lone voice trying to do it, at least until he wins Heatherly over in the sequel. I thought that was interesting. It was a cool little visual thing to show, even though it's very brief.
Yeah, I think it's the U.S. Capitol building.
Is it? And, yeah, there it is.
And yeah, no, I think that ties in, you know, even more succinctly with Heather Lee, just as someone who's so kind of new to it. And, you know, her quote about joining the CIA was, "I think I can make a real difference here," or something. And I think she is starting to realize that, you know, not that the CIA is broken or entirely corrupt, but finding her place in that, or whether she should be in it at all, or whether her and Bourne should be together on the inside or on the outside or separate. I think it's just her. I took that shot because of how recently we were dealing with her story at that point in the movie, as her struggle that Bourne's already gone through about what level of government participation can you still feel is correct and feel you're a true patriot. I mean, Dewey throughout this movie is often saying one thing and doing the other.
Yeah.
And she's well aware of the fact that he doesn't have a lot of integrity, and whether he is patriotic or not, seems to act in the interest that is just going to keep him and this institution together longer than maybe what the best thing for the country or the world or, you know, humankind in general is. So I took that shot as her really realizing that this is going to be something that she's constantly negotiating when she's come up to so many ambiguous characters, and the most the character that she's been kind of told is the worst, you know, Jesus Christ, that's Jason Bourne, is someone who she kind of finds herself allying herself with mentally a lot more. So I just perceive that as her struggle, and something that we both found interesting about this movie, and could definitely be something that could play out in a very interesting fashion in any sequel they choose to do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to the MacGuffin. Be sure to check back next week when we'll be talking about something else.
Thanks for listening to the MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.